All right, our next case for argument is 22-1756, Chewy versus IBM. You don't have to help me with your name.
Mr. Usayev, Your Honor.
Mr. Usayev, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'll begin with the claim construction issue. May it please the Court. The 849 patent concerns how to improve interactive applications and make them more efficient by breaking up the screen display in front of the user and selectively retrieving, supplying, and storing those
objects. Okay, so now I'm just going to ask a completely irrelevant question. I love the name Chewy. Like, why is your company named Chewy? Is it because you're breaking stuff up? I mean, where's Chewy come from?
We actually represent IBM, Your Honor.
You'll tell me later about it.
The reason why it's confusing is it's a declaratory judgment action.
Go right ahead.
So
I know why you're named IBM, in case you
can't. So that's what the patent is really about. It's about selectively sending, retrieving, and storing advertising objects. And claim one is directed to one aspect of that idea, and it recites selectively storing advertising objects. That's what the last element of claim one recites. It's about storing. Yet the district court took the word selectively, as it modifies storing, and replaced that with the concept of prefetching, which it defined as retrieving in anticipation of display.
Doesn't your patent specification talk about how important it is? I mean, the way I read your patent specification, it says that it's really important that you be able to pre-send down some advertisements. And the reason why you want to do that is so that your advertisements and your content aren't being sent at the same time, creating a bandwidth problem. I realize bandwidth has probably changed since the time you wrote your patent application. But your patent application seems to make it sound like that's a really important aspect.
So what the patent says is there's multiple ways to improve bandwidth. And I will direct Your Honor to Appendix 217. And if we look at Column 6, 28 to 33, what the patent says is further, the time required to display a page is minimized when reference objects are stored locally at reception system 400, which storage is determined by prior usage meeting certain criteria, or have been prefetched, or in fact are already used in the current page.
Yeah, but that's just objects. So the one thing that bothered me about this argument you're making is that this patent talks about objects, which are lots of different kinds of objects, but then it talks about advertising objects separately. So there is no doubt that this patent creates a scenario in which objects in general do not have to be prefetched. But your problem is, does the patent, when it talks about advertising objects, require prefetching? So it doesn't help if you point me to general object language, because there are lots of different kinds of objects that this patent covers. What you have to do is convince me that the advertising objects are not required to be prefetched, because absolutely everywhere advertising objects are discussed, and they are discussed many times here, it's in conjunction with the words prefetched. And so that's the part that's kind of hanging me up on your case.
Yes, so Your Honor, I would point you to Appendix 218 in Column 8. And if we look at lines 7 to 11, it's talking about retrieving on demand with respect to advertising objects. What it says is, objects are used to package...
Column 8, I'm sorry, what line?
7 to 11.
Thank you.
Objects are used to package presentation data and program instructions required to support the partitioned applications and advertising presented at reception system 400. Objects are distributed on demand throughout interactive network 10. So what this is saying is on demand, which is, everyone agrees, is not prefetching. On demand is you have a demand for something, that's when you get it. Prefetching is you don't have a demand for it, but you're going to get it before it's displayed. And what this is saying is objects are distributed on demand, both for applications and for advertising. And that's a specific example that's not addressed. So we brought this up in our opening brief, and we said this is why the district court got it wrong when it assumed that on demand only applied to objects
that
generally.
That sentence is not as clear to me as you suggest it is. It says objects that support advertising is what I see it referring to.
Yes, I think objects that support advertising are advertising objects, Your Honor. And think about it this way. How strange would it be if retrieving objects on demand was different than retrieving advertising objects on demand? Advertising objects are objects.
But except column 2 of your patent and other places where you talk about how important it is that you provide a method for presenting advertising which minimizes the potential for interference, or how you talk about how conventional, if advertising were provided in a conventional manner, for example, by providing the advertising as additional data to be supplied and presented at the user sites, the effort would compete with supplying and presentation of service application data and have the undesirable effect of diminishing service response time. That's talking about sending advertising on demand and saying it's problematic. And now you want to interpret your specification to disclose presenting advertising on demand.
Your Honor, I don't think we can look at the benefits of the invention and assume it has to come from prefetching. I just read the citation from column 6, 28 to 33, where it talks about this is one way to minimize interference, is prefetching. It's one way.
But what are the other ways that are disclosed in the patent?
So it says, for example, when you store objects locally. So let's take a step back and talk about this invention. What it was about is before you had the dumb terminal approach, you sent the entire display back and forth,
sure,
very, very slow. Instead, if you selectively send objects, then you send just what you're needed and you can store things locally. That's what it's saying here in column 6, is it says when objects are stored locally, then the next time you need them, you don't have to go out and get them. But that doesn't mean they can't be requested or retrieved on demand. It just means you hang on to them for later.
Counselor,
that's what it's disclosed.
My big problem with your argument is really column 3, right? And column 3 is called summary of the invention. So this is not a preferred embodiment. It's the summary of the invention. And at column 3, starting at line 5-ish, you say, briefly, the method for presenting advertising in accordance with this invention. That's like magic language. You know, the present invention is in accordance with this invention. That's language that binds you, whether you like it or not. And then it goes through in that paragraph and explains that advertising is prefetched. And so that is what bothers me the most, is in the summary of your invention, that Judge Stoll pointed out quite rightly, the objects of your invention and how you're basically showing the disadvantages of not prefetching advertising in the objects of your invention. Now, in the summary of your invention, you use this invention is language in the context of advertising being prefetched.
Your Honor, that magic language does not apply if you're describing features that are explicitly recited in dependent claims. And that are, we've cited several cases to that effect. Absolute Software, FenF, Continental Circuits, all of those say, if you say the invention or the method of the invention, and you're referring to something that's explicitly found in dependent claims, such as prefetching, which is only explicitly listed in dependent claims, then the magic no longer applies. And instead,
what cases say the magic doesn't apply? I'm all about the magic.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. Absolute Software actually collects.
Do these cases say that? Speak. Do these cases say that?
Your Honor, let me give you the specific cases, because this is very clear. Absolute Software says that. That's 659 F.3D.
Who wrote that? I could have been on that panel.
It, in fact, collects cases saying that even if you use the invention, if you're referring to dependent claims, it does not necessarily restrict all the claims. FenF.
Necessarily is a key word, right?
Yeah. Yes, but let's think about what's going on here. In column 3, the applicant is walking through the features of dependent claims. They talk about prefetching, yes. They also talk about displaying content in one area of the display, but
you
not others.
You have claim differentiation concepts to dominate your spec, where you have defined the scope of your invention. I don't know what these cases are that are trying to disavow my magic, but I am not a fan. And I'm going to have to look carefully at them, because with all due respect, I'm not believing you.
So, Your Honor, think about what it would mean if column 3, the entirety of column 3 was describing something that must appear in every single claim. Column 3.
What it would mean is that you're giving proper notice to the world what the scope of your invention is. That feels like a really good thing to me.
Your Honor, I think if we look at those cases, what we see is something that makes sense. When you say the method or the invention, Sometimes you're referring to the method of a dependent claim or the method that appears in some claims but not others. And that makes sense, because otherwise we would have to adopt all of column 3 into every single claim of the patent, and that would make no sense at all. And in fact, the district court said column 3, it does not apply to all different aspects of the claim. What the district court did...
Just for the benefit of everybody in the room, including the students, we're talking about construing patent claims, right? And how? What is the standard of review that this court would apply to the district court's construction of the patent claim? The patent claim is like a contract or statute that you have to interpret, right?
Because it's a legal matter, it would be de novo. So this court can review the construction of the claim de novo.
Right. So even if the district court said column 3 is not limiting, we could say it is, right?
Yes, I think that's right. But I think it demonstrates that there's some inconsistency here between what the district court is saying, where it's saying sometimes column 3 is not limiting and sometimes it is. And the district court said that on Appendix 62 in interpreting a different passage from column 3 and said that doesn't apply.
Okay, listen, but you're into your rebuttal time, and I want to give you a chance to address claim 12. So will you address claim 12 for me, please?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to address the establishing characteristics claim. And what happened there is the court said the characterizations were not specific to the individual users. And that simply is not consistent with the evidence. And I think the best piece of evidence for that is Appendix 14204.
Is this the privacy statement?
No, Your Honor. This is the statement of, it's an internal Chewy document titled Currently Launched Strategies. And it says that recommended products from a pet parent, i.e. a customer, that's what they call pet parents.
Is this the one that basically, if you have already bought something, you're automatically going to get certain ads?
It not only says if you bought something, you get certain ads. It says, quote, based on the likelihood that this is the right time to repurchase.
Where, I don't know where you are right now. Are you on 14204 or?
14204, Your Honor.
Okay. I don't know where you are. I'm just having trouble finding.
There's like a box about halfway down on 14024, and it says, it talks about a currently launched strategies, and then it lists what happens, and it says in the last sentence, the frequency and time probability is based on overall Chewy customer behavior and becomes more focused on the specific...
Okay, let me ask a dumb question. This is not your confidential information. It's theirs, but it's in a yellow box. Does that not mean that what you just read is confidential?
It was already non-confidential.
You already agreed
below the
on
district
that?
Court.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
It's
designated confidential here in my brief, so I just wanted to make sure.
Yes,
so
that's why. This is the indication from the lower court.
Okay.
And so it becomes more focused on the specific pet parent as they repurchase at their own intervals. So this is based on the intervals that a particular pet parent buys dog food or other products. And that there's nothing more specific than that. It's not someone else's interval. It's that individual pet parent's interval. So I do want to go back, though, and discuss one more thing about prefetching, which is not only whether prefetching is in the claim.
You are trying my patience. Go ahead.
Okay. I apologize, Your Honor, but I feel like this is really important. Even if prefetching is in the claims, there is no basis for the additional requirement that the district court inserted during summary judgment to say you need to do a specific type of prefetching that reads out Chewy's embodiment of prefetching. There's no serious dispute that Chewy performs prefetching, and everyone agrees on that.
Just to make sure it's clear, you're saying what you're referring to as prefetching in this context is downloading the advertisement along with the information related, you know, the search results, what have you, and then after that, storing it?
You can think of prefetching, Your Honor, as the district court defined it in its claim construction opinion, which is fetching.
And can you give me a yes or a no to my question? I just wanted to know, what are you referring to? Is it the idea of when you send down the search results, you have the advertising also, and then you store the advertising object for future use?
Yes, Your Honor,
okay,
that's right.
Thank you.
For future use or future display.
Thank you.
And that's exactly what Chewy's prefetching documentation says. At Appendix 13372, this is the document, and it's a little bit of a difficult document to read.
Well, I'm confused about something. I thought that your argument on appeal was limited to claim construction on selectively storing. It sounds like now you're arguing for the first time, as far as I can tell, that even if the district court was right about prefetching, they nonetheless infringe.
It's 100% in our brief that there's two bases. Number one, the claims do not require any type of prefetching. Number two, even if prefetching is in the claims, Chewy performs prefetching, yet the district court carved out the type of prefetching that Chewy does from the claims. And that is the problem here. There is ample evidence that Chewy prefetches, yet the district court said, in its summary judgment opinion, the user must prefetch, or the system must prefetch advertising before the user requests the page in connection with which it is to appear. And that additional requirement is nowhere in the claims. In fact, we have a discussion in our brief about how the claims, how the specification warns you not to prefetch everything before the user requests the page. It says...
Well, thank you very much. Let's hear from... You've used all your time, all your rebuttal time, and an extra minute on top of that. Let's have you sit down and let's get the other guy a chance.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Morning, Your Honor. Josh Raskin on behalf of Chewy. And Chewy, I believe... Chewy is a website that sells pet products.
Right.
And so
like dog food,
dogs chew
okay.
on...
All right.
Yeah.
That makes me happy. Go ahead.
So,
it's odd, by the way, to have a website that sells pet products to have patent claims directed to this advertising and object, isn't it? I mean,
well, we are not the patentee.
Oh.
We are the alleged infringer, but we are the declaratory judgment plaintiff, which is why it's a little confusing.
Oh, man, I'm messing up left and right. But thank you for
that's true.
Up.
We don't think there's anything on our website that's at all inventive.
Got it.
We are a retailer of other people's products. That's all we do. So the first issue that counsel just addressed is selectively storing, and based on the questions, I'm going to kind of skip over that unless
Could
you're on.
Could you address the prosecution history? I think you've
sure,
got
would,
some pretty good
I would love
in
to
the
address the prosecution
history.
That would be my pleasure. So
the prosecution history, can you, for the benefit of the students, can you say what a prosecution history is?
Sure. So when an applicant, an inventor, files a patent application, what follows is a back and forth with the patent office regarding whether or not the patent office is going to grant the patent on the claims of that application. It's almost like a negotiation between the inventors and the patent office regarding the scope of the claim. If the patent office finds prior art that discloses what the claim discloses, the patent owner is permitted to narrow its claim in order to overcome that prior art. The trick there is not to narrow it far enough so that nobody in the world would infringe and thereby reducing your patent to something that has very little value. So the prosecution history is the written record of the back and forth between the applicant and the patent office.
And then we can look at that. People who
yes.
want to invent can look at that back and forth and see what was said so they can help to they can understand what the patent owner has said their claims cover, that is the scope of their exclusive patent.
Yes, and in construing claims,
yes.
which is what we're talking about now, defining the scope of the claim as a matter of law, you all on the Federal Circuit have told us that the evidence that the court primarily looks at is called the intrinsic evidence, and the intrinsic evidence includes both the patent itself as well as the file history, because statements that the applicant makes to the patent office in order to get its patent are important or is actual notice to the public as to what the inventors meant by the claim terms and what they ultimately mean.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Professor.
I've always thought of being covered by professor. So turning to the prosecution history in this case, and this is at appendix, the parts that I'm going to refer to is at appendix 4604. So this patent, and this is for the benefit of the students, had a very unique prosecution history in that it lasted about 11 years. When we tell our clients how long it takes to get a patent, we usually say it takes about a year and a half to 2 years, which is a long time to our clients. They want their patents today. This patent was prosecuted for about 11 years. And the portion of the prosecution history that I'm going to talk about now was at the tail end of that 11 years. Okay, so it was at a time when IBM had their backs against the wall and they wanted to get this patent. And so they told, this is an appeal brief that they filed with the Board of Patent Appeals and Interferences. And they told the board what the summary of the claimed invention was. And this is, I'm reading from a section of the appeal brief called Summary of Claimed Subject Matter. And on Appendix 4604, and I'm going to read from the start from the bottom of that middle paragraph. They say, in this regard, advertising objects, one form of a page element, are preferably structured substantially the same as the page element objects used to present application content, the difference between the two being their respective subject matter. One are applications, one are advertising. In this way, the applications and advertising are supplied to the user's reception system in the same data stream, but in a manner where the advertising may be time displaced from the application with which it may ultimately be presented. So the first step in accomplishing this invention, the invention being solving this interference problem between applications and advertising, was to structure the advertising in a way that it could be transmitted separately from the applications. And then in the next paragraph, the applicant said, to further reduce the likelihood of application presentation delay, and that delay was caused by the interference, the specification describes selectively storing advertising objects at the user reception system. That's the claim term we're construing, selectively storing advertising, so that when advertising is to be presented, its data might be found available at the reception system without going back to the host.
So it's stored on the local.
Right. And it's yes. And then it says this method, or the method, so the one we just talked about, the selectively storing method, is this, which is described, provides for storing and managing advertising objects so that the advertising objects may be separately prefetched from the network and cached at the reception system in anticipation of being called for presentation. In other words, applications and advertising are separate entities and they travel separately to the reception system.
So do you believe this is one of your strongest pieces of intrinsic evidence?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. And it's one of our strongest, but it's also, it tracks almost exactly with column two, the abstract. I mean, if you read the abstract of the patent, it almost reads exactly like this. The summary of the invention section reads exactly like this. Everywhere in the patent where the applicant summarized the invention or said this is the invention or the method, it was stated in reference to prefetching the advertisements first before the user requests the page. Because once the user requests the page...
They were repeatedly consistent in terms of how they were describing it.
Yes, repeatedly consistent. And there's nowhere in the patent where you're going to find that the advertisements were described in connection with their retrieval any other way other than prefetching. So unless there are any other questions on the claim construction issue, I just want to turn to the infringement aspect of selectively storing. And this is what my adversary just...
Can I ask you a question? I think it's about claim 12. In your brief, I believe at page 57, do you admit that there may have been some factual disputes? And if so, if I read that correctly, why do you believe that would preclude summary judgment with respect to that claim?
Okay, so now we're talking about the characterizations?
Yes.
Okay, what page, 57?
57. I thought I saw something right at the end there that... perked up my ears.
Okay,
so is the in short sentence on page 57?
In short, although there may have been some factual disputes, none of them rose to a level of... Yeah, so I think what we're talking about here is that... refresh my recollection of what we were talking about here. So I think what we were referencing here is that they had an expert. Okay, who said that certain features of the Chewy website, and I'll point out that the features that their expert submitted an expert report on are not the features that IBM raised in the appeal. The features that IBM raised in the appeal, this pet lovers, not pet lovers, it was pet parent or buy it again, was not at issue at the district court. It wasn't briefed in IBM's summary judgment brief. They did raise it in about a page and a half of the transcript at the summary judgment hearing, but there was no briefing of the buy it again feature. Judge Rakoff did not even rule on the buy it again feature. It's not found at all in his decision.
Did you argue that this was waived?
We didn't use the term waiver, Your Honor, but we did argue that it was not mentioned in their briefs. The reason why we did not argue waiver is because we did acknowledge that they mentioned it in oral argument, but we did not argue waiver. But I will mention that there is no record or decision by Judge Rakoff on which this panel can either affirm or reverse, because he never decided whether the buy it again feature infringes Claim 12. The only features that he focused on.
Did he address the privacy documents?
Yes, he mentioned the privacy documents, and he said that those privacy documents were consistent with the features that he did analyze, which was the frequently bought together and pet lovers also bought features. Those are the features that he analyzed on summary judgment. And he found that those don't satisfy Claim 12 because those features rely not on characterizations of an individual user, but on aggregate information collected about users generally.
I didn't think that was right. I thought that the information was if you bought it in the past, and it doesn't just mean you personally, but basically any person in this room that bought this particular product in the past was going to get a certain advertisement by virtue of the fact that you bought this product in the past. Is that, am I understanding the feature correctly?
Okay, so let me try to explain. So there are two sets of features, one that were argued to Judge Rakoff on summary judgment and one that is argued today on appeal. The ones that were argued to Judge Rakoff were called frequently bought together, okay, or pet lovers also bought. And the way that worked is if I go onto the Chewy website and I choose a dog bowl, okay, and I click on the dog bowl, and it takes me to the product page, what the algorithm will do is send the SKU, the SKU for the dog bowl, to their database and see all the users that ever bought that dog bowl, do they buy something else at the same time? For example, detergent to clean a dog bowl. And they would say, maybe you want to buy this because all pet lovers also bought this. Okay, Judge Rakoff found that that wasn't sufficient for purposes of Claim 12 because that wasn't based on the transaction history of that user.
That makes sense.
It's based on the transaction history of all the users.
Can I understand what you're saying, which is that IBM did not assert the other evidence that's like, for example, at the privacy page about targeting advertising based on the user search?
Well, at the summary judgment stage, IBM did rely also on the privacy policy. But Judge Rakoff dismissed that by saying that's not inconsistent with collecting information about it. What the privacy policy says is, and the court, I'm sure, is familiar with privacy policies, right? These are just statements preserving the right, the company preserving the right to collect a lot of information about a user so that they don't get themselves into trouble later on and sued for privacy violations. And what it says is we may collect information about you. And one of the reasons they say we may collect information about you is that so we can give you the most relevant information, relevant advertisements.
And is this document confidential?
No, it's not.
It's, okay. It's 14509. But here's the sentence that really kind of causes me pause about what you're arguing. It's 14509, where right after interest-based advertising, it says, we and our service providers use cookies to learn about what ads you see, what ads you interact with, and other actions you take on our services. That's not going towards whether somebody else bought detergent with the dog bowl. that is specific to you, the user, that they're gathering this information. This allows us to provide you with more useful and relevant ads. So they're specifically saying, we collect the information about what you personally are doing, not what other people are doing, you personally, and that we then give you ads that we tailor based on that information we collected about you.
Okay. And
so that seems like that, right on point.
The way that Judge Rakoff dismissed that, and it's a way in which we agree, is that, yes, it's true, it's going to collect information about me. For example, I bought this dog bowl, and I also bought this detergent to clean the dog bowl, and it's going to collect that same information about my colleague who goes to the website and buys the dog bowl and also collects that, purchases that detergent. But that's not what the patent covers. It doesn't cover what is collected. It covers how the advertising is supplied to me based on what's collected.
And these documents that Judge Moore is referring to suggest that the advertising received is based on that. Are you saying that these documents are not evidence that you're actually using this advertising?
It is based on that, but it's based on that information that's collected about everyone, not just about me. If I purchase the dog bowl...
That's not what it says here. This does not say that.
Well, what this says is what's collected. It doesn't say...
No, and then it says, this allows us to provide you with more useful, relevant ads. So it's saying, I collect this stuff about you, and then that stuff I just collected about you allows me to provide you with more relevant ads.
There's a reasonable inference under summary judgment, drawing all factual inferences in favor of the non-movement.
I understand that, Your Honor. But one other point on this privacy policy is that IBM didn't tie this privacy policy to any particular feature of the Chewy website. Okay, it says all of this. Granted, it says all of this. But there's no proof that Chewy actually does this. And privacy policies are known to not recite the
truth.
But
that's what the summary judgment
is. Yeah, that's what Judge Stoll just pointed out.
We're talking about summary judgment.
Yes.
I'm sure the students know in this room, that means that we have to, and the district court had to, make all factual inferences in favor of the non-movement. And here you've got a privacy policy that says we're going to collect this information so we can provide advertising content based on, you know, what your prior purchases were.
Yes. And that's true. All reasonable inferences have to be weighed in favor of the non-movement. But there needs to be evidence that Chewy performs the step of Claim 12 beyond just statements in a privacy policy saying that we collect this information. There has to be evidence that there's
a case law that says there's certain documents like privacy policy that will not be enough ever to show information.
No, I don't, Your Honor. I don't. But I'm saying in order to go to a jury, okay, and another way of stating the summary judgment standard is that no reasonable juror can find in favor of the non-movement. And we submit that to go to a jury just with this privacy policy, not pointing to any specific feature of the website that implements what this privacy policy says, and any evidence that that feature actually performs what the claim says.
I want to give you a chance, though, to address the feature that they did point to today, at Pet Parent.
Yes.
And on page 39 of your brief, your only response to the Pet Parent thing, in addition to your suggestion that this document wasn't cited in their motion below, the only other thing is rather... all users of Chewy's website that previously bought the item were receiving the same advertisement. You know, that's not actually at all persuasive to me, personally. And so I guess you can waive waiver. I don't read page 39 as arguing they waived this, all right? And so if waiver doesn't apply, and if now there's a privacy policy that says they use your targeted information, and then there's also... a particular feature that they are pointing to, which you have not said they waived, which is this pet parent feature, why isn't that enough?
Okay. I'll try to give you three reasons. Number one, on the, I won't call it waiver, but it's an easy way to refer to this argument. Judge Rakoff never ruled regarding
then
whether this...
Then why don't I vacate remand for him to do that?
Okay, that's one option. But if you did vacate and remand for Judge Rakoff to provide an analysis of this feature, he has no tools to do that because it was never briefed by IBM before him. Their expert, IBM's expert, Dr. Schmidt, never gave a single opinion on this buy-it-again feature in his expert report. It's not mentioned once in his entire expert report.
Okay, but is it in evidence? What page number is this? 12-9-12-14-204, is that page in evidence that was before the judge on summary judgment?
It was in...
Because it seems explanatory on its own face. You don't necessarily, as you know, need an expert to testify everything. If there's a document that says what it says and people can read it, it doesn't matter whether the expert mentioned it, right?
Well, the only reason
Was it in evidence presented as part of the summary judgment package?
Yes.
So couldn't they, on remand, maybe you're exactly right, they shouldn't be allowed to now modify expert testimony and have the expert try to explain it, but can't they just point to the document and show the judge how this document on its face, especially in conjunction with the privacy policy, shows that there is a particular Chewy application or section of code or whatever that is doing exactly what their privacy policy
says? Well, I think the problem with that, Your Honor, is that like most things in patents, the devil is in the details. And it's how this feature works, this buy it again feature. Okay? All we have is a one-page document that mentions this buy it again feature. There's no analysis of the underlying source codes. Chewy produced its entire source code in this case. And in IBM's brief...
It's not per se required, though, right, to have an analysis in this regard?
Well, I think there needs to be some sort of evidence as to how this feature works, right?
Evidence is page 14204 about how the feature works. This is just summary judgment. You could always put in testimony that says, that's not in our source code. I realize that the statement, the page says that, but, you know, look, they can't point anywhere in our source code where it actually does that, right?
Well, that is what we argued to this court, that they never... pointed to anything in the source code as to how this worked, despite the fact that in their brief they said that their expert did a painstaking review of the source code. He said that in connection with a different, with the selectively storing argument. And so he did a painstaking review, but yet never even mentioned this feature in his entire expert report. It's not anywhere to be found. And so, yes, there is a feature called Buy It Again. And when a user goes onto a website, it might say, hey, you bought this dog food a month ago. Maybe it's time to reorder. Okay? But there's no testimony regarding what happens in the back end. How did the system know to display that notice, that prompt to say, hey, you should buy this again? There's no testimony as to how that happened. And the claim is specific that has to happen based on an analysis of the user, the respective user's characterization, meaning the user's transaction history. So what if the system says, all right, when I type in chewy.com, the system says, let me check the user's, all the shipments that have been made to that user. And we shipped dog food 30 days ago, let's prompt. That shipment isn't my characterization.
This is summary judgment, and I have to... All the inferences have to go their way, not your way. So you could come up with a million hypotheticals where maybe what you say on 14204 doesn't fit within the scope of these claims, but don't I have to infer for their sake that maybe they've produced just a smidgen of evidence that is enough?
And now I'm getting back into a waiver argument that we didn't make.
Okay, yeah,
but
done.
But I'm saying, all I wanted to say on that, and then I'll sit, is that Judge Rakoff couldn't have weighed it in favor of them because they didn't make the argument. But okay, I'm finished unless you have any further questions.
Thank you for being finished. You can have as much time as you want. Come on. I mean, look at this.
Okay.
Your Honor. He didn't sit when I told him to sit, so I mean, boy.
Okay. Your Honor, I promise you'll want to hear what I have to say. So,
I'm
making a
big... Wait, hold on. Can we take a vote on the likelihood of that?
Can we vote after I say it? Okay. So, Your Honor, on pages 17 to 18 of our reply brief, we walk through why this evidence was cited in our brief. and we explain. And it's simply incorrect to say that this evidence wasn't in the record about characterizations.
He didn't say it wasn't in the record. He said that your expert didn't testify to it, and he also said that you didn't specifically mention it in your summary judgment briefing. He did not say it wasn't in the record. He, in fact, agreed it was in the record. So do not misrepresent what he said.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think if we look at the record of the summary judgment briefs, we do explain why it is actually in the record. In our summary judgment briefing, we explain why in the discussion of characterizations.
Okay, where is that?
Actually,
where is that? The page of the appendix. Summary judgment, that's one. Maybe around 127-ish?
It's, it is on appendix 8563.
I am way off.
Actually, let me start off the page before 8562. And that's under the header there.
Chewy meets characterization limits.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so okay. This is us addressing their arguments at summary judgment.
On claim 12.
On claim 12, exactly, Your Honor. And what we say at the bottom of page 10 is Chewy does not dispute that Chewy provides targeting advertisement. The evidence further established that Chewy provides targeting advertisements based on characterizations of users. And we cite the analysis of how Chewy does that. And then further down below...
Okay, but is any of this a cite? Because, of course, these are like record cites that don't line up, of course, with our appendices numbers. So what he says is, yeah, you made arguments like that below, but they weren't to this feature that is identified at 14204.
Yes.
So I need you to tell me, are any of these exhibit cites 14204? And please know that my clerks are going to be looking behind this. And if you get it wrong, if you don't know the answer, tell me you don't know the answer. Because if you tell me, yes, this is it and it's not it, we're going to have a further discussion later you're not going to like.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. I know it, and I will point it to you right now.
Go ahead.
It says, Dr. Schmidt's report includes analysis of certain examples, including Chewy's frequently bought together carousel, and its pet lovers also bought carousel, and further explains how those carousels rely on characterizations of users, including interaction history, such as past sales and the subject matter of requested applications. That's the assertion, and the evidence to back it up is IBM SAMF, paragraph 78 to 84.
Are you now saying that IBM SAMF paragraph 78 to 84 is what we're going to see at JA 14204?
So what
remember,
that is...
you're not sure. That's the way to go.
I am sure, Your Honor.
Okay.
And what that is that's the...
my question, yes or no?
Yes, it's okay. The 56-1 statement, and it's, you know, the paragraphs you cite at summary judgment about here are the facts that are in dispute. And if you look at the 56-1 statement, which are IBM SAMF, at paragraph 78 to 84, you're going to see a citation to Exhibit 93.
And Exhibit 93 is?
Is exactly the document we've been discussing. 14204. So let's look at 14204.
Where in the joint appendix can we find what you were just describing? Because I don't think it was the page that Judge Stoll mentioned. I just want to make sure I'm tracking.
Yes, Your Honor. So 14203 is Exhibit 93. You'll see it there.
Yes, I see that.
Okay.
But you were mentioning where we could find IBM SAMF paragraph 78 to 84. I want to see that.
Do you have that?
Yes,
in your
it's
appendix?
14203 to 14204. So let's look at that.
This is very good. You've got an excellent mastery of this appendix. I like it.
But I'm not seeing
that.
Oh, it's exhibit, it says Exhibit 93, but that's
yeah,
not.
That's
oh, sorry, sorry.
I
have it. 8563.
Okay, thank you.
No, that's the page you have us on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sir.
I take back my compliment.
Okay.
They're looking for IBM SAM.
Sorry. 14832.
Okay, I think we might have made it somewhere.
Man, we
thank you for
it.
Your patience.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Pet lovers also shopped for, pet lovers also bought, right? 83, yes. There we go.
There you go. So that's the connection. So the reason why it's difficult is because we cite to the 56-1 statement.
In his defense, it's a little tenuous, but it's there.
Yeah, and it's all walked through on pages 17 to 18 of our reply brief. So if you want to see the entire chain, that's where it is.
Can I ask you about the source code evidence? Your opposing counsel was raising a concern with respect to that. Can you at least address that before you have a seat?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's the Amdocs case we cite. And what that says is you don't need source code to prove functionality. You can prove it in other ways, too. And I think that's what Your Honor was alluding to.
And you're just seeking to have a trial on this, right?
Yes.
And so if you wanted to put in the soft source code at that point, you could, right?
Yes. So if opposing counsel wanted to cross-examine our expert and say, well, you know, you didn't find the specific source code, then there would be a dispute about whether source code was enough or whether there's other ways to present stuff.
Okay.
There's one more question that you asked me,
and I
want to make sure I answer it crisply. And your question was, do you allege that Chewy prefetches in your opening brief? And the answer is yes. And I just want to make sure that's super clear. On page 32 of our opening brief, there is an entire header titled Chewy prefetches advertising objects under the court's claim construction order. And the purpose of this analysis is to say, even if the courts require prefetching, we shouldn't exclude their implementation of prefetching by adding additional requirements. So that's what's there.
Excellent. Thank you. I thank both counsel. You both did a wonderful job. And thank you so much for doing all this in front of the students. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.